You may be seated. Having come to now the middle of our study, verse 15, look at those words with me. It's just amazing to see where it says, "So the wall was completed on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. 52 days. Completed. Amazing. They said it couldn't be done. They laughed, they mocked. You see, when we began this story in our study of Nehemiah, it was in the winter of 444 B.C., the month of Kislev, which would be late November, that Nehemiah, who happened to be the cupbearer of the king of the known world, was in such a position that although he had been a Jew in exile, he had found his place and prominence before the king. And it was on that time, on that occasion, when he heard the testimony about his own people, which had returned back to Jerusalem. It had been 150 years since the people, and since the walls had fallen, 150 years that these walls had lay in ruin, 80 years since the people had first returned. But Nehemiah, when his brother Hanani came to him, he wanted to know, how are things back in Jerusalem? How are the people? Are they encouraged that they've returned? Are things getting back to normal in Jerusalem? Are they glad? And their response when they said to Nehemiah was, "The remnant there is in province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are burned with fire." Now here was the report that they came back with. The people, Nehemiah, they're not doing good. There's a city there and there's a remnant there, but the people are not living in joy. They're in distress. They're in misery. They're in fear of danger. They are in desperate need. They're living in reproach and the shame, living in disgrace. They have become a subject of mockery to the surrounding nations around them, and their heads can no longer be held high. And every single day that those people in Jerusalem got up and they walked around the city, they saw these piles of stone, and it was one more reminder as to their failure. How they had fallen. Every single day they lived in the truth of their own situation that they had brought themselves to, and there had been glimpses of hopes over the years. Of course, there was rebuilding of the temple, Zerubbabel and Ezra, but yet there was little joy because the city was still in ruins. And then the question was, could the people ever know joy again? Would they ever really amount to anything? Was God really done with these people? Maybe it was all over. And so Nehemiah, when he heard the words of the report, he says, "I sat down and I wept and I mourned for days. I fasted and I prayed before the God of heaven." Nehemiah, he felt the report. Just hearing the report sent an ache to his heart. He took it personally. He said, "I sat down and I wept and I mourned and I prayed." And on Nisan, in the month of Nisan, April 7th, in April, just 7 months later, Nehemiah found himself gaining permission by the king himself to return to Jerusalem to restore those broken walls. And by August of 445 B.C., the prophecy of Daniel had come about, the project to rebuild. You see, Daniel had prophesied that the walls would be rebuilt, that it would be decreed. And of course, that was setting the timetable for when Jesus would come and establish himself. And everything we find here was going according to God's timetable. God had a timing. And what Nehemiah was, he was a tool that God would use to accomplish his will. You see, when God chooses to work, he chooses people to do it. We just get to be a part of what he does. That's awesome. He lets us be a part of his work. He lets us be a part of what he does and the work that he accomplishes. And he does so by stirring us up, by the burdens that he places on our heart. We talked about the burdens and paying attention to the things that he's placed upon our heart. Well, that's what happened with Nehemiah. He was a tool being used of God to bring about his purpose. And because this one man cared and this one man wept and this one man prayed and waited and acted in faith, eventually he would come with power and authority to the people of Jerusalem. And when he came to them, he had the greatest message of all. And his message was, he said to them, "Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be reproached." And the people When they heard Nehemiah and his message, they got excited. They said, "Let us arise and build." And in chapter 3, we saw that awesome picture. The picture that I title Revival, because in it you see all the people of Jerusalem and every part of the wall. They're working and they're building and they're working together. And it's just so marvelous. These people that were dead and feeling so out of it were living once again. And there was a revival going on with the people. You see, they said it couldn't be done. Not only was the task overwhelming as they looked at this great, big, huge project around the city, but there was also opposition from the enemy, as we've seen in our study, who didn't want the walls to be rebuilt. In chapter 4, we saw how the enemy came against the people through ridicule and mockery. And they said things like, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones of the dusty rubble and the burned ones? Why, even if a fox were to jump on it, it would break down." Then they tried discouragement. "This is too much, too big a project, and it'll never get done. The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble, we cannot rebuild the wall." And then there was a fear of death, as it said, "And our enemy said before us, before they know or see us, we will be right there among them, and we will kill them and put an end to their work." Fear, discouragement, and ridicule. In chapter 5, we saw the tragic situation of not only the opposition from the outside, but within Jerusalem itself, the rich were taking advantage of the poor. And there was division. All these things, ways to stop the building of the project. And of course, Nehemiah and his great leadership, he rebuked these people and they repented and they got right back on the path of building again. In chapter 6, we saw how the opposition broke out in Operation Strike the Shepherd. As Nehemiah became the target of himself, the enemy did not want to see this wall built. And so they tried everything with Nehemiah. They tried compromise. "Oh, Nehemiah, come down and meet us halfway." They tried slander. They tried spiritual deception to get Nehemiah to do something that was forbidden by the law and to run and hide so that he could become a disgrace before the people and ruin the whole testimony of what God was doing in Jerusalem. But despite the overwhelming work that had to be done, and despite the great opposition that was at every single corner, the testimony is this: by September 21st, 445, just 52 days later, the wall was completed. 52 days. The wall was built, the gates were hung, they were bolted shut, everything was in motion, and it was only 9 months that had gone by. Just 9. From the time that Nehemiah heard the report to the time that the wall was finished, 9 months. Look at the testimony here, verse 16. "When all of our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God." What an awesome testimony. All the nations knew it. All the enemies knew it. The nations that were around them knew it. When they saw what happened in Jerusalem, that this wall was rebuilt in 52 days, they said, "Something extraordinary has happened among us. God did this thing." Just as Pharaoh had to recognize the authority that was sent to Moses and given to Moses, they had to come and recognize something happened here that they couldn't explain. All they tried to do to stop it was an act of God. And here we find out that it wasn't Nehemiah in the end who got the glory, it was God who got the glory. They understood. Nehemiah was being used as a tool, but Jehovah God was getting all the glory for what was going on, just as the way as it should be. And the enemy knew it. These completed walls of Jerusalem stood as a monument to the awesome power of the God of this people. And because of it, the enemy lost their confidence. After all, how do you win when you fight against God? God won. V for victory. The enemy lost. Great story. Awesome story. But I want to ask you something. Is it the end of the story? It's in the middle of our study of Nehemiah. And one might wonder why this story just doesn't end right here. Everything's been building up to this point. Oh, yay, the wall is built. It was down, now it's built. We're so excited to see the wall built. And you would think maybe in the story of Nehemiah there might be this little caption says, and they all lived happily ever after. As we discover, that only happens in fairy tales, but not in the real world. And this is really where the lessons of Nehemiah come in. This is really where you have to pay attention. You say, oh, this is a great work that God has done. But is it true that everyone lived happily ever after? Look at verse 17. Also in those days, many letters went from the nobles of Judah to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them. For many in Judah were bound by oath to him because he was a son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era, and his son Jehonian, and had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. Moreover, they were speaking about his good deeds in my presence and reported my words to him. Then Tobiah sent letters to frighten me. Now this is what you learn in the study of Nehemiah. Yes, the wall was complete. It was victory, V for victory. But despite all this, the war waged on. This is what you've got to see here. The point is being made that though the wall was rebuilt, the enemy did not die. Though there was a victory in the battle, there was still a war going on. There was still something happening. The enemy did not roll over and die because of the victory that took place on this day. The building of the wall is not the end of the story. It's only the part of the story, but it's not the end of the story. We discover that Nehemiah is much more than just rebuilding a broken wall. This is a story about rebuilding a wall and then maintaining the wall that was built. Important. You see, here it's the lesson that we have to learn, you people. It's much more than building the walls of security and protection in our lives as we draw close to Jesus. It's also the matter of making sure that they would never fall into disrepair again. The walls of Jerusalem were not just built walls. These walls of Jerusalem were rebuilt walls. Why were they rebuilt? Because they had fallen before. You see, Jerusalem had once been a mighty strong city and the strongest of all the cities. And the whole fact that they had to rebuild it said that something happened to tear down the walls before. And if it was rebuilt of their own, the destruction of what they had done, though the walls had been rebuilt, what would keep them from falling again? What would keep history from repeating itself again? What an important lesson this is to our lives, because it's much more than building walls of security and peace in your life. It's making sure that the walls remain strong. If they had fallen before, what would keep them from falling again? Andrew Bonner said, "Let us be watchful after the victory as before the battle." And this is the concept that is being developed now for the rest of this book. How to keep rebuilt walls from falling again. Making sure that it's not just a V for victory, but then to lose the war. You see, opposition lived on. And the enemy did not roll over and die and say, okay, we lost this one, we quit. The context here is that the enemy was still working. There's nothing that had changed. The enemy didn't let up because the wall was completed. From within we find there was people among their own countrymen that lived inside Jerusalem that were consorting with the enemy, Tobiah. Those who maintained allegiance with the enemy. Not everyone was in support of Nehemiah and the work that had been accomplished. Among his own people, the enemy found supporters. How? Through letters of fraternization, no doubt, as Tobiah would write to them and they'd write back and they would say things to him. And so Tobiah gained an inside accommodation from the people who were against Nehemiah. These nobles of Judea had fallen in league with the enemy. These ones who were high birth and those who were recognized as elite of the society. It said, for many in Judah were bound by an oath to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era, the son of Jehonian, who married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. You see, there was a family connection between some on the inside. He was part Jew, married to a Jew, and here we have this family bond that tied these people to Tobiah, and they would come in the context here in the development of the story. As you look at this situation, it's almost hard to believe. Because amidst the story of courage and the fact that it only took 52 days, you find out that there was still this opposition, this working that was subtly working underneath against the building of the wall. And they would come in the presence of Nehemiah. And they would talk to Nehemiah, and they talk about Tobiah, the enemy of Nehemiah. And they say, oh, you know, Nehemiah, he's really a good guy, Tobiah. Nehemiah, he really cares about Jerusalem. He really cares about us. He's not that bad of a guy, Nehemiah. He's really something. And then all the time that Nehemiah is sharing with these people, they're going back and telling Tobiah everything that's going on. They become spies. And Tobiah had been undermined by the leadership of, or Tobiah had undermined the leadership of Nehemiah. He had become a troublemaker that would remain and cause trouble throughout the remainder of this book. You see, to undermine is to subvert and weaken, ruin by degrees. And Tobiah was trying to weaken the leadership of Nehemiah over the people. And you want to look at this and you figure, well, why would they be a party of this? Was it willingly? Had they just been deceived? Or what was it? Why couldn't they see how God had been with Nehemiah? There's a couple of possibilities I want to give to you. The first one, I would say, spiritual or deception. That is no discernment. They couldn't see what was going on. They didn't want to see, some of them, and they chose not to see because to see made them uncomfortable. The kind who just kind of like smooth it over. Let's just all live in peace. They allowed themselves to believe the enemy's lies because it was easier for them. Why rock the boat? The path of least resistance. Let's just all get along. Loyalty for the family. Let's not have any waves. Let's just all get along. I've seen this so many times in ministries where there's the undermining of leadership. And then all the people are consorting and drawing members after themselves and their own ambitions, and people become unwitting parties to what is going on. And you see the subversion of what God's plan is for the people. But the second reason I want to throw out to you that there is those who had their own agenda. Perhaps these nobles had a different motivation for rebuilding the walls than Nehemiah did. Perhaps for them it wasn't so much that they'd become a nation that was strong again, that we restored to God, but it was a time for them to get richer. You see, with the walls rebuilt, real estate values would go up. The stock market would increase. It's the economy. And perhaps they shared the greater interest of Tobiah than they ever did of Nehemiah, because they had a whole different situation of what they were looking for. They share the goals and the interest of the enemy. And perhaps some of them were offended at the rebuke of Nehemiah when they were exploiting the people. And perhaps now it was time for the true motivations to be revealed. But here's the bottom line of what you see here. The bottom line is that they didn't share the same heart, vision, and purpose of Nehemiah. They were on a different page. Listen, this will always be true of every good work of God. Every good work. There will always be those who don't share the vision of leadership, who have an agenda of their own, who are going their own way, and when the chips are down, that most vulnerable moment, they will be quick to undermine the leadership for their own interests. And these people didn't share the vision. They were not like-minded. Thus you had opposition. That's why it is so important in any work of God to make sure that you maintain your unity. One of the things that we look for at our elders and deacons and the leaders of our church here is we look and we examine, do these people share the same heart for what we desire to happen in this ministry here? At Calvary Chapel Southeast, do they share the same vision? Are we together? Are we on the same page? Because we want to work together in such a way, lest we find the situation of Tobiah come about within our own congregation. Jesus said, if a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. If a house is divided against itself, the house will not be able to stand. And that is the devastation of disunity. Psalm 133:1 says, behold, how good and pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. And Ephesians 4, 1 through 3 says, "Therefore I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of your calling, which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing the tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace." Because Satan has his own agenda. And his agenda is to make sure that the agenda of God is thwarted in every way that he can get. And he uses people to do it. The enemy was still alive. He was still kicking and continually sending letters threatening Nehemiah that the atmosphere of disunity. "Nehemiah, don't you think you've got a hold of these people? I got some of them." And I think it was then that Nehemiah began to realize that his whole ministry and the whole cause that he had come to Jerusalem for was not just about building a wall, but is making sure that having done such a great work, that it would not fall apart at the first opportunity to preserve what had been built, that nothing should bring disgrace to the work that had been accomplished. You see, not everyone in Jerusalem stood behind Nehemiah, and the battle continued. Now, this is the application that I want you to see for your lives here. This is the lesson that you learn for your lives, for your marriages, for your ministries, for the movements of God that we go through, for the church that we belong to, for the nation that we live in. This is a lesson because the story is told over and over and over again about great walls that were built, great works that were established, only to find them fall someday once again through neglect and disinterest and disunity. How many marriages I think I have counseled who've come in and they desire to see the Lord do a great work, only to go to this little quick patch job, and they leave and they walk out and they don't pay attention to what they've just gone through and learned. They settle for little quick fixes and patch jobs, and they neglect the wall that was built. How foolish it is to think that the wedding day is the end of the story. As great as that day was, the commitment and the vows and the beauty of it all, we have a couple here getting married this week, on Tuesday. It's going to be an awesome day. What an awesome time it is at the wedding when you're going through that and you're celebrating and you're taking these vows and people are there enjoying it with you. But what you learn about marriage is that's just the start. The question is where are you going to be 20 years down the road? 50 years down the road. That's the real question. The wedding day was awesome. It was beautiful. But it doesn't matter how great the day was or how beautiful it was, because that can only carry you so far. What becomes important is that you maintain a healthy marriage. You keep that wall healthy. And people who don't learn this lesson are headed for ruin. They don't pay attention to the wall that was built. I think of our walks in the Lord. How many began our walks in the Lord? We were committed to the Lord's plan that He was everything to us. We wanted Him and we desired Him and He was everything. "Oh Jesus, I love You more. My life is Yours. My plans are Yours. Everything is Yours." And we were saved and we were filled with the Spirit and the wall of security and the peace was built. But as time went on, we didn't pay attention to the wall anymore. Pretty soon we found out that the wall was being destroyed through neglect and disinterest and laziness and unchecked passions that we had. And one day we found ourselves laying in the ruins of our own spiritual lives. Because after we had the victory and the day of victory, we didn't maintain the wall. James Montgomery Boyce said, "Why is it so many people will acknowledge God and even pray to Him regularly and fervently on the way up of the long ladder of success, but once they reach the pinnacle, they forgot their religion and regard success as their own exclusive achievement? It is inexplicable to the reason that it's conveniently to forget God so they can indulge themselves without any higher responsibility." Paul said to the Ephesians, "Be filled with the Spirit." And what he meant by that is keep being filled with the Spirit. Why? Because it doesn't stop someplace. You don't live off of one moment. A walk has to be guarded. And living this vital walk requires work and attention. Every time you get up in the morning and you spend those moments with the Lord in devotions and in prayer, what are you doing? You're maintaining the wall. Every time you come together with other believers and you have this fellowship and this time of worshiping the Lord and encouragement, mutual encouragement to each other, what are you doing? You're maintaining the wall. Every time you come before the Lord Jesus and you pray to Him and say, God, my life is yours, my plans are yours, you're maintaining the wall. That's why the enemy wants so hard to break you away from fellowship. Every time you take communion like we're going to do this morning, what are you doing? You're maintaining the wall. You recognize that it's not just a matter of quick fixes and all that's just going to carry you through life. Listen, some people will live from one crisis to another. I've mentioned them before, crisis Christians. They will never get serious about the Lord unless some crisis comes into their life. And then it's time to get serious about the Lord. I think of the ministries. How many ministries start out with vim and vigor and the movement of faith as people trusted the Lord and the awesome testimonies of works that were established, only to one day find out they've been weakened and slowly they fall into disrepair. They had succumbed to the world's passions and carnality and worldly thinking. How many ministries began as great works of God, only to find out one day that the walls that they began with have been torn down? How many pastors and church leaders began well? They were strong and valiant in the Lord, only to one day find out that their lives and their testimonies have become the mockery of the cause of Jesus. And how many nations have began in a right course with great foundations, only to discover one day that their walls have fallen down? I think of our nation. I wonder who was guarding the wall over the past 50 years. All the great schools and the institutions that were started that at one time were seminaries, Yale and Harvard, seminaries that despise anything about God in our day. What happened? Someone didn't guard the wall. They walked away from the wall and they thought the wall was built and there was no more work to be done. Just finished. You see that, you see here, it was and it is more than just laying strong foundations of strong walls. It's making sure that the wall stands strong once they are built. 1995 of June. We didn't know where we were going to go for a church building. And through a series of events, the Lord led us over to this little red church right down the street. We walked into that church and it was an ugly sight. Ugly. I didn't like it. I never wanted to be in a church building. And here we were, found ourselves in this, looking at this building, and what was so hard for me to picture was there was a day, 50, 60 years ago, when that building was just built. And how those people must have been excited. The building was new. The community and people would flock into that little church building down the street. What a marvelous time it was. And the pastor was excited, I'm sure. And the people were excited. They had built this church. But by 1995, by the time we got in there, the doors of the church had been closed for 6 months. The Methodist denomination decided that the 6 to 8 people that regularly attended the church could no longer maintain the church. By the time we got to the building, the yard was all overgrown outside. Windows were broken. The walls were disgusting. The floor was gross. And we walked through this ugly shambles of a building, this place that was one time the celebration of a group of people, was dead. And we got in there and we worked and we labored. And once again, this community saw life happen down the street. What a blessing to see God use that little church. Don't know how long we'll be there. It's been the greatest blessing we ever had. How God would use that little shack of a place and say, oh, once again, claim it for His glory. the Lord tells me this. That could be Calvary Chapel Southeast. That could be our story. It could be your story. Once the excitement, once the joy, once the great anticipation, the sharing, you start off with something great and important, but what you learn is it's only the beginning. The vision never dies. Should never die. You see, the story is about preserving the strength that you began with to make sure that if walls are built, they don't come down. That you maintain the work that was established. And the story is told all too often as those who started hot for the Lord and only to, at best, become lukewarm. The wall was built and they paid no attention, making sure that it remained strong. And this is so sad but true. I have witnessed myself this endless list of people that I've known who started out great. Started off excited. The Lord was everything. They went their own direction and they posted no guard and they walked away from the wall and they thought the work was done. And later, they lived in the ruins of their own neglect. They didn't learn these vital lessons that we find here in Nehemiah as we go through our study and we see the rest of maintaining the wall. You see, you have to maintain what has been entrusted to you. You've got to guard it. I think of the New Testament and all that it has to say about perseverance and endurance. All that it says about making sure that you keep walking. We come here Sunday after Sunday and on Saturday night after Saturday night we get together for pastor's prayer and we pray over our church. And the reason we do it is because we say, oh Lord, keep this fresh. We don't want to live on yesterday's stuff, God. We know that today, tomorrow, there's something you want to do. There's something that you want to refresh us in the truth so that the wall is maintained, that the testimony of Jesus Christ goes out into the community. Paul wrote to Timothy and he said, oh Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to you, avoiding worldly and empty chatter and opposing arguments of what is falsely called knowledge, which some have professed and gone astray from the faith. In 2 Timothy 1:14, he said, guard through the Holy Spirit who dwells in us the treasure which has been entrusted to you. Paul was so aware of the fact that strong walls can and will fall down if they're not guarded. You see, you might think that you're strong, but if you don't guard these walls of security in your life, don't be surprised if one day you wake up and you find yourself in the ruins of what happens because you neglected your walk. You see, yes, the testimony here is these walls were complete in 52 days. It's a marvelous testimony indeed. God got all the glory. The heavens rejoiced, but these people needed to know something more now. They needed to make sure that the wall was rebuilt, would not come down again. This was the beginning. It wasn't the end. It was this talk of endurance and perseverance. Yes, the walls were built, they were strong, they were beautiful, but if they didn't pay attention, the same thing could happen to the walls as what happened before. You see, people, the day that you and I received Jesus was the most wonderful day. It was V for victory. The heavens rejoiced. The angels sang. It was a day like no other day. If you're looking back in your life like I do, and I recall the day that I submitted my life to Jesus, there was a great victory on that day. But what I've learned is that over the years, that the enemy didn't die that day. Oh, I began to live, but the enemy was still living. And we have three very specific enemies who work continuously. Undermine the leadership of Jesus in our lives. We have our flesh, which wars with the Spirit. We have the world, and we have the Prince of Darkness, who can't wait for you to walk away from the wall. They can't wait for you to get far enough away from the wall so they can come and wreak havoc in your life. You find that on that day we were saved, it wasn't the end, it was only the beginning. How many people just live off that one day? God never intended that. That was the beginning of a work. It was the beginning of life. But life carried on after that point. You've got to guard what's been given to you. You see, when we got saved, the enemy just didn't roll over and die. What he did was he got more aggressive in your life. And the enemies became more intent. Now are you getting the picture? And the question you got to ask yourself is, what is the condition of the walls? Maybe it's in your marriage. Maybe it's in your walk. Maybe it's in the ministry that you have before the Lord. But what is the condition of the wall? Have you been paying attention to it? Has the enemy been ripping you off? Have you walked away from the wall thinking the work was done and feeling, okay, it's all over? Every single time a Sunday school teacher gets up and goes to work over that Sunday school, what are they doing? They're maintaining the wall. They teach those children lessons. They're maintaining the wall. Every time we come here together, and we encourage and we exhort one another, we're maintaining the wall. It isn't just about building it, but about making sure it stands. There's only one time, people, that I will know that the work is done. And that's when Jesus tells me it's done. It'll be on that day when He says, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things." And that is the only day that I can say it's over. When I come into His presence. And I see Him. But while I yet live in this life, the war wages on. And there's this wall. This wall that has been built to protect us. Do you see God's intent for the wall? It's not to hurt you. It's to keep you safe. It's to keep you from becoming the ruins. Pay attention to the wall.